Your radio, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
To the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and of course we're going to talk about this the biggest story there is, the U.S. assassination of an Iranian leader. We're going to be talking to Zafar Bengash, Crescent International, and later in the program we will be talking to Michaela Lavis. She has a column in the Sunday Star, My Christmas in Kashmir Refugee Camps, very important and neglected story. So we'll be speaking about these matters. It's, I'm sure everybody is aware that this is a, I guess we could start by saying we ought to consider it here in Canada. The vote by the legislature, the Parliament of Iraq yesterday said foreign forces should leave Iraq, and that includes Canada. This is not about only the United States. NATO, for example, is meeting. Canada had a general there, or has a general. I don't know if she has left yet, but I would recommend that she do that. So far, Canadian Parliament is quiet as a tomb, as would be expected. But we better start thinking of our own responsibilities. There should be a strong statement condemning the assassination of an Iranian leader who was on Iraqi soil at the invitation of the Iraqi government. He was representing a sovereign country. These are little fundamental things that have to be understood. Instead of being in a cowboy movie with Trump as the star, we have to be in a real world where other countries exist, where international law exists, where if you have a difference with a country, there are words like diplomacy. There's also international institutions to which you can take your complaint. But to be a cowboy is to really have a death wish, and perhaps the United States has one. We're joined now by Zafar Bengash of Crescent International. Are you there, Zafar?
Hello, Phil. Yes, I'm with you.
I'm very glad to be talking to you, Zafar, because, of course, we're very proud of the fact this is independent radio, and we do talk to people who actually visit places like the Islamic Republic, Iraq, know the area and all the players, and take a point of view that it is not formal and stamped by NATO or the Pentagon. So that's welcome to the show, and I'm glad we're talking to you. I want to try out a headline on you, my headline would be, the Islamic Republic has lost a general, and the United States has lost Iraq. Did you think that's about accurate?
Well, I would go a little further than
oh,
that.
Oh, good.
I think the United States has lost the whole of the Middle East. Mm-hmm. The way I read the situation, definitely as a consequence of what the U.S. did last Friday by assassinating a very high-powered general of the Islamic Republic, General Qasem Soleimani, who was head of the Quds Force, as well as the deputy head of the popular mobilization units in Iraq, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, and of course there were several other people with them, altogether about 10 people or 11 people were killed in those missile strikes. Naturally, the most prominent of which was General Soleimani, this has naturally not only heightened the prospects of war in the region, but also made more enemies for the United States. That headline that you mentioned, yesterday, the Iraqi parliament actually passed a resolution demanding that the U.S. forces immediately pull out of Iraq. And so we know that the NATO training mission has suspended its operations in Iraq, which incidentally is headed by a Canadian general, a female.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, I believe that the way events are moving, there is no doubt in my mind that beyond Iraq, the U.S. Would definitely have to pull its forces out of the rest of the region as well, because it has inflamed the region in such a manner that the rest of the countries also would not mm-hmm. want U.S. forces or NATO forces on their soil.
And by the way, right at that juncture, both you and I admire the writing of Sharmeen Narwani, and I urge people to go to her site. She has a Twitter account. But she said, which made that point, that about other states in the region, she even speculated some of the Gulf states will say, look, you know, you've made us targets. This is not our fight. We don't want it. And the U.S. will be asked to go. As you know, they don't appreciate being asked, by the way.
Of course.
This is not something. Already we're getting this very heavy, ugly response from them, turning, you know, Trump turning it into threats against what he's going to do to Iraq. One day he talks about how he's going to burn Iran down. The next day he's talking about he's going to burn Iraq. And I'm very glad you pointed out that actually they're losing in the whole region. And shouldn't we apply a term that they don't want to hear, that what we're seeing is the spread of democracy?
Yes, of course. You mentioned the Gulf states. I'm glad that you did, because Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Bahrain have already indicated that they do not wish to get involved in this. Bahrain has suspended all flights to Iraq because of the situation, and both Dubai and Abu Dhabi have sent messages to Iran that they do not wish to get involved in this conflict. The U.S. has troops in Abu Dhabi as well, and I think it is more than likely that they would also, that is, the Emiratis would want the U.S. to get their forces out of there because it makes them a target. Now, we know that Bahrain has as a naval base, it's the home base of the U.S. Fifth Fleet, and Qatar has, Qatar's Al Udeid Air Base is used by American forces for central command in the region. So there are a number of military bases that I believe are likely to go out of operation as a consequence of what the United States has done in the recent few days.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, as I mentioned, heightened risk of a war breaking out. The Islamic Republic has made very clear that they are not going to allow this matter to pass by, because they have lost a very senior general. It was an illegal act. It was a violation of Iraqi sovereignty. It was an illegal act under international law, mm-hmm. a violation of the UN Charter. You look at it any which way, it was an absolutely illegal and criminal act, mm-hmm. for which obviously Iran reserves the right to exact revenge.
Mm-hmm.
My information is that the U.S. has sent at least three secret messages to Iran telling them that they should retaliate in proportion.
In proportion,
that
yes.
Their retaliation should
Did you see that the London Telegraph said, what are they doing, offering them pence? Did you see? I mean, this is a British right-wing paper.
Yes. And so, you know, so
give them the kid, I think is the way you go. Go ahead.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, you know, whether they're offering pence or a four-star general or
yes.
whatever, I think, you know, definitely something that will occur. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, some people have speculated that, you know, Iran has not retaliated yet. But that's not how the Iranians act. Their defense minister yesterday, the former defense minister, General Hossein Dehkan, in an interview with CNN, he made absolutely clear that Iran will retaliate and it will hit American targets, and it reserves the right to strike wherever it feels like. And in fact, other Iranian officials have said that this is the beginning of the end of the U.S. presence in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe them because they don't make bombastic statements. They say what they mean,
yes.
And they will carry out their retaliatory strikes.
Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting to note that today one of the advisors to the Iranian president published Donald Trump's various assets, personal assets, real estate assets around the world,
mm-hmm.
Without going into details. And I think this is an interesting hint that they have offered that Trump's personal assets are also likely to be targeted, because it was Trump that had given out the order to carry out this illegal strike.
I assume it's his favorite ice cream factory, golf course.
And, of course, Trump Towers here and there are likely to, you know, we will see what happens.
Yeah.
But I think,
but I agree with you. I think it's very important to emphasize this, that this is not a country without resources. It's also, it's very important to remember that America is a colonial experiment of the British, and you could say North America, it's British, the French, and the Spanish. The Islamic Republic is a very old civilization. It's been through many, many things. It understands time and the resources it has. It's not a conquering country that's been going around dictating to all the corners of the world. And so when people think of responses, they tend to orient, the mind goes to how Washington behaves, but the rest of the world actually doesn't act like Washington. Maybe Britain and France to a degree. But what actually is going on is that they attempted regime change in many places, but in Syria they hit a rock that they hadn't anticipated. And the people there have rallied with the support of other states who have been invited to be of assistance and have provided assistance, like the Islamic Republic and Russia. And the U.S. thought they were going to be in power in Damascus, but that hasn't worked out. Now you have someone like Bolton who says, well, killing General Soleimani he hopes the first step to regime change in Iran, but he doesn't realize the fire burning behind him. He didn't conquer Syria.
That's correct. Yes,
and not in charge of Iraq anymore.
That's right, yes. In fact, the U.S. has lost Iraq, and it failed miserably, together with its allies, the Zionists, the Saudis, and other...
the British, the French, and Canada.
Yes, unfortunately.
Canada's been very much involved in this.
Yes, and as you pointed out, the U.S.'s failure in Syria is the direct result of the help that the Islamic Republic of Iran and Hezbollah and ultimately Russia offered to Syria. And it was, in fact, the strategy that General Soleimani had devised for Syria that ultimately prevailed and defeated these ISIS terrorists. It's interesting to note that General Soleimani was perhaps the single most important figure in devising a strategy to confront the ISIS terrorist threat, both in Iraq as well. well as in Syria. And he managed to defeat these ISIS terrorists in both countries, although these terrorists were backed by the United States, by Israel, by Saudi Arabia, by Turkey, incidentally,
yes,
and Qatar and these other Arabian regimes. And yet we hear quite scandalously the U.S. and its mouthpieces denouncing General Soleimani as a terrorist. In fact, he was the one who defeated the terrorists.
Yes.
And so, and Syria is a prime example of this. In fact, the Syrian army is pretty close to cleansing out the last remnants of ISIS terrorists from its territory. And mm-hmm. by then, if it does so, then it would have completed the retake of its entire country, entire territory, from the clutches of these people.
Yes, and I want to ask you very specifically about that, because it seems to me that this might be a chapter missing in most people's sort of summary of what's going on. The United States reversed course three or four times, zigged and zagged, but it loudly committed itself to the idea it was going to hold on to Syrian oil fields, and indeed is stealing Syrian oil at this moment. But the problem they were encountering was that in that region, ISIS had been operating across the border, and it was Iraqi, what they call them, the popular militia units?
Popular mobilization
under the direction of the Iraqi government with the authority, in the Marine Corps we call it color authority. They were fighting them and removing them and thereby exercising Iraqi sovereignty over the border, which complicated America's theft of Syrian oil and also of its ability to operate in the region. Is that right?
Yes, of course. In fact, that was actually planned and being implemented. Both the Iraqi and the Syrian governments were working on this plan to seal the border so that these ISIS terrorists cannot move back and forth between Syria and Iraq. And naturally, the U.S. was dependent on these ISIS terrorists to facilitate its theft of Syrian oil. Although it's not a huge amount, it's perhaps a few tens of thousands of barrels per day,
mm-hmm.
yet it indicates the manner in which the United States operates. And Trump was quite blatant about it. He said that we are going to keep Syrian oil. We are not going to let it fall into anybody else's hands. Syria has actually indicated that it is going to launch a war crimes case against the United States because the United States has admitted stealing its resources, which is international law.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the situation that we find ourselves in. But I think that Syria... Iraq border definitely will be sealed now that...
And that will be a strategic defeat if that border is secured.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely strategic.
Yes, exactly. And I wanted to mention that in Iraq, there were some factions that were aligned with the United States. I'm talking about political factions.
Mm-hmm.
But since this attack that the U.S. carried out last Friday, early morning last Friday, even those Iraqi factions that were previously aligned with the United States have now turned against them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has basically sealed the U.S. fate in Iraq and obviously in Syria as well. And those are the two major areas where U.S. troops were operating, although there have been reports that the U.S. has sent additional troops to Kuwait, 3,000 of them. But my information is that the Kuwaitis are also unhappy about it. Secondly, there are reports that the U.S. is actually pulling troops out of the region. The forces that have been sent to Kuwait are essentially to safeguard their embassies in the region, because the U.S. embassy in Saudi Arabia has issued a warning. A similar warning has been issued by their embassy in the Gulf states as well, embassies in the Gulf states. And we know that the U.S. embassy in Iraq has been completely evacuated. All consular services have been suspended. And so there is, despite claims to the contrary, in fact, a retraction of U.S. forces from the region. And if we keep in mind that Iran is likely to retaliate for this act of aggression of last Friday, then naturally the U.S. Generals feel that the less forces they have in the region, the better it would be for them, or there will be less casualties, American casualties. And I also want to finally add that the Hezbollah Secretary General, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, day before yesterday, issued a statement in which he said that this is the beginning of the end of U.S. presence in the region, and Americans should prepare to receive body bags because now it is all-out war. And I don't think that Sayed Nasrallah is the kind of person who issues empty threats. He's the kind of person who delivers on his words, and I think this is to be taken seriously.
Yeah. And by the way, I mentioned the issue of democracy. It sounds like an odd word to throw in here, but the fact is that the Syria is a democracy. The United States doesn't care to call it that. It's certainly as much a democracy as the United States is. And Iraq has a parliament now, and in Lebanon, the Hezbollah is a political party, and it is in parliament, and it is probably the most respected member of that parliament because it is the least corrupt and is also the main protector of the country. When I talk about the spread of democracy, people, frankly, in my mind, that is what's taking place. Of course, democracy involves sovereignty and self-determination and the right of states to resist foreign powers, including superpowers. This doesn't, and well, let me underline that by reading something to you. I want your comment. I'm sorry, if I'm holding you up, I'll let you escape, but I want you to, this is Zafar Bengash, Crescent International, definitely an authority. This is what the Prime Minister of Iraq said yesterday to the parliament. He said, Haj Soleimani was in Baghdad at my invitation. He was scheduled to visit me and carried a letter with him from the Iranian leadership on how to de-escalate tensions with Saudi Arabia.
That is correct.
And
yes.
He's murdered.
Yes.
By a drone missile, a drone. Not just him, of course, but others lost their lives there, including the deputy Iraqi commander of the militia. But that's what he was there to see, the prime minister. And now Iraq is showing that it is a self-respecting society, it expects its institutions to be respected, and it complete. And this is not. I'm reading people who I have some respect for, like Chris Hedges and others, who say, we've really made the Shia angry. No, you've made Iraq, people of all stripes, angry. You've made the people of Syria angry. And they talk about these militia that the United States put them on the list of terror because America keeps a list. They're like Santa Claus. They make a list. But they neglect to point out there are Christian militias in Iraq that are on the list that the Americans made.
Yes. You see, the problem with the U.S. is that it has no consistent policy. And at any one time, if they decide not to like a particular group, then they just put them on their list of terrorist organizations.
Yes, and those Christians would be regarded as Shia.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's how we're supposed to see it. Oh, it's a Shia.
Right.
Or they're backed by Iran. If Iran supports people fighting terrorism, the people fighting terrorism in Iran agree about something, and they do it.
Yes.
There's nothing, it's not something scurrilous or immoral or improper. It's exactly the thing to do.
Exactly. Although the U.S. and its allies keep on talking about fighting terrorism, but regrettably, they're the ones that are actually supporting these terrorist groups like ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is documentary evidence. You know, we can go back, for instance, to February of 2011. There is an article published in the Washington Post by a person by the name of Craig Whitlock. Mm-hmm. And in that article, he admitted that the Syrian opposition groups have been receiving money from the United States dating as far back as 2005. He actually gives figures, financial mm-hmm. figures, that in 2005, the United States provided $6 million a year to these Syrian groups to set up a television station in Britain to broadcast propaganda against the Syrian government, and that these various terrorist outfits mm-hmm. that had originated in Iraq, mm-hmm. In Buqa camp, where Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi was actually stationed. He was given freedom to move about and organize. And then we have those famous photos from May of 2013 when John McCain, Senator John McCain, had illegally entered Syria, and he was photographed with Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who mm-hmm. was the head of ISIS. Mm-hmm. Now, this photograph was...
And quite happy to be with him,
yes,
clearly from the picture.
Yes, absolutely. They were smiling. They were quite happy.
He wasn't a hostage.
Yes. And then McCain's office issued a statement once this photograph was published. That, oh, that was a mistake. We inadvertently issued that photograph. Although they did
the mistake was issuing the photograph, not his being with him.
Exactly. Yeah. They did not dispute the fact that McCain was with that guy. And so here we have a situation whereby the U.S., on the one hand, claimed that it was fighting against these ISIS terrorists. And on the other hand, a prominent senator of the United States was actually meeting the head of ISIS
mm-hmm.
inside Syria.
Yes.
And so that indicates to us as to how the U.S. operates, and anybody that does not support U.S. policies is immediately branded with this broad yes. brush of allegation of mm-hmm. being a terrorist.
Yes.
But we can see from the conduct of the United States that its government actually acts as a terrorist state.
Yes, and that's very important to underline. And we're speaking to Zafar Bengage, Crescent International. Why don't we remind people, the spiritual leader, the Imam Khamenei, he lost the use of his right arm, wasn't it? Or his left?
His right arm, yes.
In an explosion, a terrorist attack in which many died, and he
yes.
was one of the survivors.
Yes. He was actually targeted. The exact date was June 28, 1981. he was actually delivering the Friday sermon at Tehran University, where millions of people still attend that Friday prayer, and he was the target of a suicide bombing, not suicide, but a there was a bomb placed over there, and he lost the use of his right arm, as well as the right side of his body was injured. He survived, but as you pointed out, there were many other people that did not. There were other attacks that were carried out.
The whole judiciary was killed in one blow, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Beheshti was killed?
That is correct. He was the Chief Justice. There were actually 72 people.
So they know something about terrorism. They've been the victims of terrorism.
Exactly. Then there was another terrorist attack in August of 1981, in which the president and the prime minister and one of their aides were killed in the presidency when a meeting was taking place. So Iran has actually suffered a number of terrorist attacks, and I want to point out that these acts were carried out by a group called Mujahideen-e-Khalq Organization.
I'm very glad you do that.
Which the United States actually had categorized as a terrorist organization. Then in 2012, they delisted them from a terrorist list, and they continue to operate, and they still have offices in Washington, D.C., and even here in Canada, they operate quite freely.
And they have a little army in Albania.
Yes, exactly.
And they actually joined and were allies with Saddam Hussein's 8-year war on the Islamic Republic, on Iran.
That is correct, yes.
And which is pretty much the definition of a traitor.
Exactly. These people were these people committed treason against their own country. They were citizens of their own country. They have absolutely no support inside Iran, zero support. And yet the United States foolishly thinks that it can use these people, whom incidentally people like John Bolton and Rudy Giuliani actively support. In fact, they receive money from the group to appear at their conferences. The last conference that this group had held in Paris, they actually even bussed in people from Romania, Bulgaria, and so on. These are not Iranians. These are actually Romanians and Bulgarians whom they paid and said, look, we want to give you a trip, a free trip to Paris. You come and, participate in this conference, because they simply wanted to pad up their conference numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they bussed in people from there so that they could show on television cameras that, their conference hall is full.
It's very glamorous. You can see it on YouTube. It's a light show with shiny things and huge stages, and they practically lower people from the ceiling to put on a show.
Yes,
and
exactly.
It's McCain. And by the way, I'm so glad you said that. It was 2012. They delisted them as a terrorist organization, and that was Hillary Clinton, John Kerry,
yes,
and President Obama.
That is correct.
So
yes,
all this yammering about, the general was involved with terrorists and this and that, they openly associate and finance a group who has carried out acts of murder and assassination in the Islamic Republic, killing thousands of Iranians.
That is correct.
And meanwhile, we have to argue, did this militia group in Iraq or did some group in Syria put an IED or whatever it's called along a road? They're openly waving their arms in front of a group that is dedicated to destroying the Islamic Republic.
That is correct. In fact, this group, MKO, as it is referred to by the abbreviation, Mujahideen-e-Khalq Organization, had also actually killed Americans in Iran. And that was the reason why they were put on the U.S. terrorist list, not because they killed the leadership of the Islamic Republic or civilians in Iran. They were actually responsible for killing more than 1,200 people in Iran between 1979 and 1981. So in the two-year period, this group had killed more than 1,200 people. That included ministers, the president, the prime minister, many members of parliament, many scholars, both religious as well as academics, or people that were known to be staunch supporters of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This particular group targeted them. And then, of course, they were dealt with according to law in the Islamic Republic, and others fled the country and set up their bases first in Iraq. And then, as you said, after Iraq, the Iraqi government came into the hands of its legitimate representatives, then this group fled, and it now has its headquarters in Albania. But they keep on holding their conferences in Paris for some reason. The French government is very keen to support them. Also, the Saudis are financing them. The former Saudi intelligence chief.
He spoke to the last meeting in Paris, I think.
That is correct.
And the Americans present praised him as the star of the show.
That's right. Turki Al-Faisal, he was the one who spoke over there, and he's a nasty creature. He was Saudi Arabia's intelligence chief for many years, but he's been involved in these nefarious activities as well. So you see that when we look at the landscape, the United States actually is implicated in supporting many terrorist outfits, starting from MKO, going on to Al-Qaeda and ISIS. All of these groups have been backed and financed and supported by the United States at one point or another, and ISIS is still being supported by the United States. So, you know, for the U.S. to turn around and accuse General Soleimani of supporting terrorism or instigating terrorism is completely off the mark. He was, in fact, instrumental in fighting these ISIS terrorists in a very, very effective way. And if ISIS has been decimated, it's precisely because of his activities and his strategies and tactics that this situation has emerged.
And very specifically on that, Zafo, and you could underline it, the people might remember seeing the white pickups and the black flags and the retreating and collapsing Iraqi army, the one trained by the Americans, and they were claiming they were going to take Baghdad. And the people were then, they created militias, they were armed and trained, and defeated ISIS, a very close call. They were going to, and that's the moment we're talking about, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad that you made reference to that. That was the time when these people openly, you know, completely openly driving around in these brand new Toyota pickup trucks, flying their black flags and planning to take over Baghdad, but then they were confronted and prevented from doing so. Although they did occupy large swaths of Iraqi territory, the area between Iraq and Syria, in fact, they had that territory under their control for quite a while, until first they were defeated in Iraq in 2013, and then gradually the circle was tightened around them in Syria, and now they have, of course, been confined to a few pockets in Idlib province, which the Syrian army is moving on steadily to liberate from their clutches.
Yes.
So these ISIS terrorists, backed and supported by the United States and its allies, have gradually been defeated in both Iraq and in Syria, not by the U.S., but by the people of Iraq and the people of Syria.
Primarily those militias, popular militias, to which General Soleimani provided simple expertise, what the Americans call training.
Yes.
He trained them.
That is correct.
And they were able to liberate themselves. Now they have a parliament, and the parliament says to the foreign forces, go home.
Yes.
Zafar Benghazi, it's a great pleasure to talk to you. By the way, last point, I'll just say, I assume you agree Now that the Globe and Mail and others are using headlines like rogue state to describe their closest ally, wouldn't it be time to reverse course and remove the sanctions on Syria, remove the army elements from Iraq, and to end the sanctions and restore relations with these states?
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, remove the sanctions against the Islamic Republic of Iran as well.
Starting with the Islamic Republic.
Exactly, because they're all victims of this rogue state's policies and this terrible man that occupies the White House, whom actually 27 U.S. psychiatrists have said that he is mentally unstable and unfit to be the president of the United States.
Yeah, but that describes the last four or five presidents, so, you know. Some are starting to talk about Washington that way. Zafar, it's a great pleasure to talk to you. It's very, very informative, and we're going to continue to follow it. And thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Phil. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. I think we have probably some appropriate music from we're going to do Bob Dylan, if it's available.
Come, you masters of war. Here that build the big guns, here that build the death planes, here that build all the bombs, here that hide behind walls, here that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes.
That's Bob Dylan, and it's Masters of War. This is Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. We're on SoundCloud and Facebook, the Taylor Report. I want to just say about the thanking my guests and going back to the interview with Zafar Benghazi and the assassination of the Iranian general. Now is the time for everybody to talk more soberly and correctly and emphasize international law. And, you know, remember we had Chrystia Freeland said she believed in the rule of law. Well, the rule of law got violated big time by the U.S. government. Let's see what Canada does. I would tell them the first thing to do is restore relations with the Islamic Republic, end the sanctions against Syria, stop this policy of punishment, punishment, punishment for people who are actually overcoming colonialism and neocolonialism, the idea that, oh, we still have the right to go there and sort people out and dictate and use our armies, that's got to come to an end. And I'm very unhappy that we have a parliament that does not even talk about this. And so that makes them bankrupt colonialists, in my opinion. And I have a little song for you from Judy Collins. We'll end on that. And thank Braden.
Years after the revolution and the old king's execution, 4 years after, remember how those courtiers took their final bow. String up every aristocrat, out with the priests and let them live on their fat. 4 years after we started fighting, Mara keeps on with his writing. 4 years after the Bastille fell, he still recalls the old battle yell. Down with all of the ruling class, throw all the generals out on their ass. Why do they have the gold? Why do they have the power? Why? Do they have the friends at the top? Why do they have the jobs at the top? We've got nothing, always had nothing, nothing but holes.